Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales. Natalie has been in the top 1% in the country for over 25 years and number one in Hawaii for 2 years prior to stepping back to building Realty Universal. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And she joins us now. Hey, Natalie.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here another week. And, it's just going to be such an exciting show. For all of our listeners out there that are used to our show, you know, we usually do half real estate and half self-help, giving back to the community. We switch it up here and there, and that's the beautiful thing about being able to do our own show virtually. Anyhow, we are getting today, we're actually going to switch it up a little bit more, and we have a wonderful guest that's coming on in a minute. We are going to be talking about Frank Sinatra's 100th birthday celebration, and I don't think anybody's done what he did, and for the 20th century, he's just amazing, one of the greatest entertainers, and we have Guy Steele is going to be coming on, and he knows so much about Frank Sinatra. He has just really given back in a huge way. And for the 100th birthday program, host and creator of the Station Sinatra program, that's Guy Steele, he presents newly released recordings by the singer. He's going to do that also, I guess, this weekend, including the 1966 performance with the Count Basie Orchestra at the Sands Hotel, Frank Sinatra's 1961 concert in Sydney, Australia, and radio appearances from the 40s. The celebration of Sinatra's centenary continues on December 12th at 7:30 p.m. with a live concert in HPR's intimate Atherton studio in Hawaii. It is going to be really interesting. Well, Sinatra, called The Man in the Music, every week, host Guy Steele enchants listeners with the HPR with the life and times of one of the 20th century's greatest entertainers. The program features the singer's recorded and live performances as well as his lesser-known radio and television appearances. Unlike any other known radio show dedicated to Sinatra, Guy Steele includes excerpts from interviews with Sinatra himself, as well as commentary from arrangers, musicians, songwriters, and others who've worked with him during his long career. The documentary-like format is so interesting, provides the behind-the-scenes details of how Sinatra's albums and songs were created and recorded, and close-ups of this complex talent who has become an icon of American entertainment. Today, we're going to talk. We're going to talk more than hearing the songs. But when you listen to Guy's show, he plays quite a lot of songs and music and his amazing collection. That show is produced in Honolulu by Hawaii Public Radio and can be heard regularly on HPR2, Sundays from 5 to 6 o'clock, Hawaii time. It actually went on the air first in October 1998, 5 months after Frank Sinatra passed. So this is going to be fun. Guy is the host, and he created it. His foray into radio broadcasting began in 1974 at Oregon Institute of Technology. He was a DJ, play-by-play announcer, and general manager of KTEC, Oregon campus radio station. After college and a 10-year stint working in radio in Northern California, he joined Edward Jones, where he is now. He actually joined in California in 1989, moved to Hawaii in 1995 to manage the firm's Kailua office. So anybody out there, if you need financial advice, planning, Guy's fantastic. I can I can say I know Guy, too, and I'm very privileged to know Guy. And this is going to be really fun to just go in and we'll have like a kind of a question and answer session here today. Guy, actually, it says he bought his first, we'll go into this when we're on the thing. That's going to be, I have questions here, so this is going to be fun. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Guy Steele. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Natalie. Thanks for having me on your show today. I'm looking forward to talking about one of my favorite subjects, Frank Sinatra.
I love it. I love it. I love it. And this is like the holiday season in December. His birthday is December 12th. It's just such an uplifting time, you know, to discuss this. And we're going to pull away from the real estate a little bit today and go through it. I am just so impressed. You literally started this show. I knew you did this show, but I didn't realize you started it back in 1998.
Yeah, well, you know, I became a Sinatra fan when I was in college in 1974. I bought my first Frank Sinatra album. And, you know, it's real funny because at the time, if we go back a few years before that, my dad and I used to watch football games on Sundays. And one Sunday they ran a commercial for Dutch Master Cigars. And they had this, you know, those four guys that are in the Dutch Master Cigar box.
And oh, wow.
They were singing this. Yeah, they were on this TV commercial. They were singing in barbershop harmony, "When You're Smiling, the Whole World Smiles With You." And I thought, wow, that is a great song. If I ever could find that someday, I'd love to have that for my own collection. Well, fast forward years later, it's 1974. I'm in college, and I'm in a record store on a Saturday afternoon. I'm thumbing through these albums, and here's a Frank Sinatra double album, and the first song listed is "When You're Smiling." And, so I'm thinking to myself, wow, there's a song I wanted all these years. And it was a double album, so there were like, 24 songs or 20 songs on the two LPs. So now I'm in a quandary. I don't know any of the other songs, like "I've Got You Under My Skin," "Night and Day," "Angel Eyes," all these classics, right? That's how naive I was. So I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm a poor, starving college student. Do I want to spend $7.98 for this double album?
Yeah.
So here I am agonizing for about 20 minutes, and I decided, okay, I'll go ahead and buy this album and take a risk on it. So I went back to my dorm room on the campus, and I put it on the turntable, and I listened to the four sides kind of half-heartedly. Because, you know, in my mind, I was thinking this is old fogey music. This is music my parents used to listen to. It's not with it. It's not modern. And, yeah, I was thinking that way. And then I finally listened to the four sides. And as I say, I only half listened to them. And then I put the LP again, probably never, ever to play it again. And then a voice inside my head spoke to me. And the voice said, "Shame on you. You know, you paid all that money for that double album, and you didn't even listen to it. Now, you get that album out again, and you put it on the turntable, and this time you devote your full attention to it, and listen to what Sinatra's singing, listen to what the orchestra's playing, and then if you decide that you don't like it, that's fine, but at least give it a fair shake." So I said, okay. So I listened to the voice, I put the album on again, and side one, cut one, what do you think the first song was? It was
"I Got You Under
My Skin."
Really?
Probably his single greatest recording. So I listened to that, and 3 minutes and 40 seconds later, I'm a changed man. I say, you know something? That is the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life. And the second song that played was "I Get a Kick Out of You." And the third song was "Angel Eyes." And later on, you know, the album played "Night and Day" and "Nice and Easy" and all these great songs. And by the time I got done, I was a Sinatra fan for life. I thought that was the greatest stuff I ever heard. So anyway, I'm kind of long-winded here in answering your question. But
I want you to be, because this is so interesting. Please, yeah.
Well, ever since that moment, I had a lifelong quest to collect everything that he recorded. So now it's like, I think 41 years later, I've collected all of his studio recordings, many of his radio shows, a lot of his TV appearances, a lot of concerts and stuff. So I have this massive collection. So I've accumulated that over these years. So when Mr. Sinatra passed away, in May of 1998, they were doing tributes to him on TV and big concerts and things around the country to recognize his contributions to music in the 20th century. And I thought to myself, you know something? This is great they're doing all these tributes to him, but nobody's really done anything on the radio. And I thought, you know, I've got all of these recordings and performances by Sinatra. I said, you know, I could do a great documentary on his life that could span, you know, take years to do it.
But, wow.
I could play everything he ever did. So, and actually, Natalie, that was kind of a dream of mine for years. I realized years ago that, years before that, that I had this great collection, and my dream was to put it on the radio and share it with everybody. So I got the idea then on his passing, so I approached Hawaii Public Radio and asked him, if they consider having a show like that. So he said, okay, why don't you put together a sample hour and let me hear it, and then we'll let you know. So I did, and he listened to it and called me back and said, wow, he says, it sounds great. He says, you got it. You got a one-hour gig every week. So it was a personal dream realized for me, and, you know, here it is 17 years later, and I'm just enjoying the opportunity to share all this with everybody.
Don,
and
you've been doing this.
It seems like the show's well received.
You do it every week for 17. You've been doing it every week for 17 years.
Yeah, it's on Sunday afternoons at 5:00, and it's an hour. And we try to cover all of his career, and there's a lot of material, so it's obviously a labor of love for me, and I enjoy sharing it with our listeners.
You are giving back so much, and that's just incredible to me. What I mean, everywhere I hear, you know, they say that he literally is one of the best in the 20th, and nobody's surpassed him. Like, what? And when you were listening to the first song, and something in your spirit and soul said, "Wait a minute, listen to this. Go back. You listen to this." And you said you fell in love. Then what was it about him that just it was it the his voice, his name? What's that passion that he thanks Sinatra have that people speak about that he. He just got under people's skin in a good way, huh?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and I'm sure I'm not alone in my answer to that. And what I'm about to say, because I think a lot of people feel the same way I do. When I heard Sinatra sing that, it's a combination of his voice, how he was singing the song, the musicians behind him, the arrangements, you know, by these great orchestrators like Nelson Riddle and Billy Mayne, Gordon Jenkins and Don Costa, people like that, Axel Stordahl. When you put all that together, I get this a lot. When I interviewed a lot of Sinatra's musicians and arrangers and people that work with him, the thing that keeps coming back to me, and this is the way I felt too when I heard Sinatra sing on that double LP in that dorm room at college, he sings it in such a way that you feel like he's singing just to you. And that, said that to me so many times, and I heard it so many times, I thought, wow, I guess I'm not alone in feeling that way, because I really felt like he was singing just to me. And you know, there's a lot of great singers in the 20th century. You know, there's Ella Fitzgerald and Bing Crosby and Mel Torme and all these wonderful, wonderful voices and these great technicians, and they can sing wonderfully. But Sinatra was the only singer that taught people how to tell a story when they told a song. He was the first one that told a complete story. And when
really?
You listen to a Sinatra recording, yeah, it's like when you listen to a Sinatra recording, it's like a 2.5-minute play, you know. The way he sings, and he kind of sings the song from the inside out, you know. And like a lot of singers will sing the notes of a song that just happens to have words to it, right? They'll sing the notes, and they're showing off their voices and how great they sing, and a lot of them hit the notes beautifully, and they perform real well. But, you know, Sinatra, he studied the words first. The words were very important to him. So before he recorded a song, he would study the lyrics for a long time, and then he'd practice it, and he'd try to, he'd filter it through his brain and try to figure out what the writer of the song was trying to communicate. And then in Sinatra's unique way, he was able to communicate the feelings of the writers, you know. So
wow.
So if he was singing a sad song like One for My Baby or some one of these songs of lost love, you felt that ache in your heart because of that. And then when he sang things like I've Got the World on a String, where he was exuberant, or Come Fly with Me, where he's just
oh, I love that.
You know, happy. Yeah, and yeah. Yeah, yeah, he's happy, and I mean, he communicates that joy to you, right? So he's a terrific communicator, and I think that's what gets across to people is the fact that he's telling a story and he makes you a part of it.
That is such a great, that's amazing. It makes so much sense because he resonated with everybody and just wow. I wonder if he had, I mean, that sounds like a silly question, but I wonder if he actually had the voice lessons, or of course, anybody in that field constantly probably keeps getting that, or, I mean, you know, or actually to perfect their, I don't know.
Well, you know, he did have a voice teacher around 1939, 1938, I'm trying to remember now, but somewhere around there, he worked with an opera singer named John Quinlan, who taught him how to deepen his voice and broaden his range. He didn't have a lot of lessons, but during his life, Sinatra could never read a single note of music, but he had this incredible... Yeah. He could never read music. Neither could Bing Crosby, by the way. Neither one of them could read music, but you know, Sinatra, along with Bing Crosby, had this tremendous... natural ability, you know, and a terrific musical taste. So Sinatra knew exactly what he wanted behind him, and he could, he was absolutely in control of all of his recording sessions. You know, he would, before he would do an album with Nelson Riddle, for example, in the 1950s, when they churned out all those terrific albums at Capitol, he would sit down with, Nelson Riddle, and he'd sketch out each song, and he'd say, okay, I want should be a soft and quiet violin introduction, and then I want these instruments to come in here, and he would spend like 20 minutes on each song dictating to Nelson Riddle what he wanted, and Nelson Riddle would take all these copious notes, and then after they got done with all that, Nelson Riddle would go back and write the arrangements the way Sinatra wanted them, and then Sinatra had terrific musical ideas that he wanted behind
him. That's brilliant.
Terrific taste in music, yeah.
I had read somewhere that what got him interested in singing was watching Bing Crosby perform, I guess.
Yeah, that was a big motivator for him. He always wanted to sing as a child. He sang in his father's bar. And, you know, he loved to sing, so he'd sing at, you know, bar mitzvahs and weddings and anywhere he could sing. I think he sang with a little neighborhood band and so forth, sing on street corners and stuff. And at that time, of course, Bing Crosby was a big, he was like the most popular singer in the country, right? So all the singers were trying to sound like Bing Crosby because he was like the number one guy, right? And Sinatra decided early on in his career that he didn't want to sound like Bing. He respected Bing and what he was doing, but he wanted his own sound. So it was a week of March, I think it was March 3rd, 1933,
wow.
I think it was, if I remember correctly here. He went to sing. He went to hear Bing Crosby sing at Lowe's Journal Square, and I think that was in somewhere in New Jersey, my memory... Lowe's Journal Square in New Jersey, and Crosby was on the stage with just a guitar playing behind him. He didn't have a band, just a guitar. It was one of his last concerts he ever gave, but Sinatra went there with his future wife, Nancy Barbato, and he was so impressed with Bing that after the performances, he was walking out, he said to his wife, Nancy, he says, you know, he said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be the greatest singer in the world. That's going to be me up there someday. I'm going to do it. And Bing was definitely motivated him to persist through all the early years when it was real tough for him and to finally have some success. Yeah.
That's, he did. He knew. He just knew what he was supposed to do. That's fantastic. So,
yeah.
Wow. So I in yeah. So then from there, where did he go? Like I read he was he was in a band for a couple years.
Yeah. Well, he kind of kicked around New Jersey for a while, and you know, singing wherever he could, and just he's you know, a job singing in bars and things like that. And then he got a job one time working at the Rustic Cabin in New Jersey. And it actually paid less money than the singing job he had before, but the major thing it had that the other place didn't have was it had a wire, which means that they broadcast on the radio every night. So in those days, there was no TV, so everybody listened to the radio all the time. So on a lot of these New York area radio stations, they would have the studio would go out to a remote broadcast and pick up a band playing at one of the spots around the New York area, New Jersey area, and one of these was a Rustic Cabin. So Sinatra wanted to get his voice on the radio because he figured, you know, if I sing on the radio and people hear me, maybe somebody will discover me that way. Well, that's exactly what happened, because in 1939, Harry James, a trumpeter, had just started his own band, I think, in March of 1939. And before that, he had played with the Benny Goodman Orchestra, and he became such a great trumpet player on his own that he decided to break away from Benny Goodman, form his own band. So he was looking for a male singer. And one night he was relaxing in his hotel room between shows, and his wife came in and said to him, you know, Harry, you might want to hear this kid on the radio. He sounds pretty good. So Harry listened to the radio, and he loved the voice that he heard. He thought, wow, that sounds pretty good. But he didn't get the name of the singer because the announcer didn't announce who it was, but he did say that it was a broadcast from the Rustic Cabin.
Oh.
So the next night, at least he knew where the singer was at, right? So the next night after his own show, Harry James drove out to the Rustic Cabin to see who the singer was. And he walked in, and he said to the guy, he says, I'm here to see your singer. He said, who's your singer? He said, well, you know, we don't have a singer here. We've got, you know, a waiter here who sings a little bit.
And, really?
It turned out that
I didn't know that.
Wow. Oh, yeah, Sinatra, he waited on tables as a waiter, and, you know, they had a house band there, and he would sing with the band a little bit, but he also waited on tables, and that night he sang for Harry James, and Harry James liked it. He liked the way Sinatra handled the lyric, even at that early age, and he hired him, and then in June of 1939, this happened in June of 1939, and the next day Sinatra left the Rustic Cabin behind and joined the Harry James Band, and that started his career.
Mm. Wow. That's...
And he was with the Harry James Band for about 6 months. He made 10 recordings with Harry James, and one of his first recording was From the Bottom of My Heart, and then the one that everyone remembers today was he sang All or Nothing at All, which at the time was not a big hit at the time, but it became a big hit a couple of years later. About 4 years later when Sinatra was the hottest thing in the country. They had a musician strike going on then, and then Columbia reissued that old Harry James recording, and it went way up on the charts, number one or something like that. It was a big hit, yeah. But yeah, so then he worked with he did 10 recordings with Harry James, and he toured around the country, doing one-nighters. They went all the way out to California and sang at some spots in California, and then they made their way back to Chicago. And this is in December 1940. And at the time, all these bands were congregating in Chicago for some big event there. I forget what it was. The mayor of Chicago was having a big bash for something or other. So all the big bands in the country were in Chicago for this big shindig they were doing. So Harry James was there, and also the band of Tommy Dorsey. So what happened was that Tommy Dorsey's vocalist, Jack Leonard, quit on him, so he needed to replace him. So he approached Sinatra about singing with his band, and of course at that time Tommy Dorsey had one of the, you know, if not the top band of the country, you know, certainly within the top five, you know, along with Glenn Miller and so forth. He was like a huge, huge success. So to go from Harry James to Tommy Dorsey was the second big break of Sinatra's career, and he, of course, he still had a year and a half contract. He had a year and a half on his contract with Tommy with Harry James. So,
oh, wow.
But Harry,
great.
Yeah, but because of the fact that Sinatra needed more money because Harry James wasn't as successful as Tommy Dorsey, and he couldn't pay him as much as Tommy, and Frank's wife, Nancy, was pregnant with their first child, and he needed more money, so Harry graciously tore up the contract and said,
really?
Yeah, go ahead and go with, yeah. He said, go ahead and go with Tommy Dorsey, and if things don't get better in a few months, see if you can get me in the band, too, because the Harry James band was really struggling right there. But yeah, then in January of 1940, Sinatra joined Tommy Dorsey, and that's when his education really began. He really started taking off then.
That's wonderful that Harry James was so gracious to do that. You know, so many would have, you know, said, hey, you owe me money, or I'm not going to let you out, or, you know, it's really wonderful that he did just tear up the contract and let him go on.
I know, he was just such a nice guy to do that for him, and, you know, Sinatra appreciated that years later, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's, he was a star from day one, it sounds like. He just had the natural ability all the way around.
Yeah, well, you know, I've talked to a lot of musicians that work with Sinatra, and I talked to Al Viola, who was Sinatra's guitarist for years, and Al told me one time, he said, I asked him, I said, well, what was it about Sinatra that made him so great? And Al said, you know, he had all this talent in the womb, you know, he was just born with it, you know.
Born that way. Yeah,
and you know, it's just like Mozart, right? Mozart was composing operas at the age of four or something like that. I don't know.
Right.
The exact,
automatic.
But you know what I'm talking about, yeah.
Yeah, he just naturally had
natural ability. Yeah, so he always wanted to sing, and he had this, Sinatra had this incredible, wonderful voice, and I'm just in awe of him. You know, I was putting this radio show together for this Saturday. We're doing that, as you mentioned, we're doing a 3-hour tribute on Sinatra's 100th birthday celebration Saturday. And I was choosing the songs to put on that show. And there's this one song that he sang at Columbia. He recorded it on November 30th, 1945. And I hadn't heard it for quite a while, and I played it. And, you know, I listened to it, and I'm just in awe of Sinatra when I got done listening to that, because the name of the song was I Have a One Heart, and it's based on an old Italian folk song. And the way he sings that in that wonderful 1940s voice, it sounds like a Stradivarius. And, you know, the way he sang the words and technically, and he sang part of it in Italian, too. And I'm listening to that, and I'm going, my goodness. He said, that is just so unbelievable that anybody could sing that good. I told my wife, Lily, after I played it, I said, you know, I said, it's unbelievable that somebody could sing that good. I was just in awe of his performance. And, you know, he was just one of a kind, just unbelievable. And I hope if you tune in to the show Saturday, you'll enjoy that song as much as I do. Of course, there's a lot of great songs on the show, but that one particularly I love.
That I have to look at the, because I won't be on island. I wish I was. I'm in L.A. right now, and then I'll be back on the convention, actually. I've got to, because I wish I could go. Hawaii Public Radio it's going to be, the website. I guess that somebody can Google the website, right? Because hear it there, too.
Yeah, you can listen to the whole show at HawaiiPublicRadio.org, HawaiiPublicRadio.org. And then once you get to that page in the upper right-hand corner, there's a little logo that says Listen Live, and you can click on HPR2. There's two stations there, but we're going to be on HPR2, and click on that, and then you get the audio live audio stream on your computer, mm-hmm. and you can listen to it. And that'll be at 3 o'clock on this Saturday. That's 3 o'clock Hawaii time.
Right, that's fantastic. Oh,
yeah.
That's exciting. Boy, you have like a whole museum of everything for Frank Sinatra, it seems like, really. It's what it sounds like. You have clips and interviews and songs, and oh, it's just amazing. So,
well,
I love it.
Well, I'm very fortunate because, I was kind of laughing when you said that because, Lily, my wife, it's kind of complaining about all the stuff I got around here, and that's why we're expanding our house this year so I can have more room to keep all my stuff. But I've got a tremendous amount of things I've been able to, unfortunately, accumulated over the years. A lot of all of his recordings, and but the hard thing to get are his radio shows. Those are difficult to get, but through different sources, and I was able to obtain many of those.
And you're going to actually play those on Saturday, some appearances from the 40s as well?
Yeah.
I was reading here. I was reading on
Sinatra.
Wow.
Yeah, in honor of Sinatra's 100th birthday this year, they've issued some a CD set called A Voice on Air, 1935 to 1955, and it's all these recordings of Frank Sinatra singing on the radio. And I'll tell you, Natalie, when I started doing the radio show on Hawaii Public Radio in 1998, I thought I knew just about everything about Sinatra's career. I thought I was pretty well educated, but boy, was I in for an eye-opener, because the more I got into this and really studied his radio work, I realized that in the 1940s, he did a tremendous amount of songs on radio that he never recorded.
Really?
He was on, because,
I never knew that.
There was no TV back then, right? So everybody listened to the radio.
Right.
So he was on a lot of radio shows like your Hit Parade, which was on Saturday night. They ran down the top 10 songs in the country. And he had his own show called Songs by Sinatra. And then he had the Vim's Vitamin Show, Frank Sinatra in Person. Later on, he did another Songs by Sinatra show sponsored by Old Gold Cigarettes. And then he did Light Up Time in the late 1940s, early 50s with Dorothy Kirsten as his co-star. And then he was guest on other people's shows back then. So if you look at his catalog of songs that he sang on the radio, a tremendous, tremendous amount that he never recorded. So this, I realized then that was a gold mine of stuff. So
Well, how do you get that if he never recorded? Oh, he never recorded it. It was just on that. But how do you get copies of that?
Well, you have to go to, if you go on the Internet, you can find some of them issued on CD. And that's what's particularly exciting about this CD set that came out this year called A Voice on Air, 1935 to 1955, because it's four CDs worth of songs. It's about, I think, about 100 songs of numbers he did on the radio that he never recorded, like we're trying to look at the list here.
Fantastic.
I Don't Believe in Rumors. Yeah. Buy a Piece of the Peace, If Loveliness for Music, My Ideal, My Heart Tells Me, Lonely Love, Long Ago and Far Away. I mean, this is just Don't Fence Me In. These are some of the songs on radio that he never recorded, and that's particularly exciting to me to be able to program that and share it with people.
Hmm.
It's just,
what golden
and
nuggets?
You know,
golden nuggets. It's just I have a question though, because I don't know. Did he, like, who wrote his songs? Did he write some of the songs, or other people write for him? Did he sing other songs that were already written or out there? I don't. I know that sounds like a naive question, but I don't really know.
No, that's a great question. And when he started in music, he would sing the popular songs of the day, right? And then, and a lot of times, because he was such a great singer of songs, songwriters wanted him to sing their songs from. So they would write songs, and they would bring them to, like, in those days, bands like Tommy Dorsey and Glenn Miller and all the top bands. They always had these songwriters coming around wanting to see if pitching their songs to the band to see if the band would go ahead and play their songs and then get them, get people listening to them and hopefully, make some money for the songwriters. So when people came to the Tommy Dorsey band to pitch songs, a lot of times, and this kind of was annoying to Tommy Dorsey, instead of going to Tommy Dorsey to pitch their songs, they'd go to Sinatra first and get his opinion before going to Tommy Dorsey. I don't think Tommy liked that too much, but a lot of times they'd go to Sinatra
there.
And then, and then, later on when Sinatra was, on his own, he broke away from Dorsey in late 1942 and began his solo career. He had his own team of songwriters that would write for him, like in the 50s. Well, actually, in the 40s, we go back up a little bit. In the 1940s, when he did his first film with Gene Kelly at MGM called Anchors Away, he had Sammy Kahn and Julie Stein write the songs for him for that movie. So, and at that time, Sammy Kahn and Julie Stein were relatively unknowns. And when MGM sat down with Sinatra, they said, okay, you can have anybody you want to write the songs. Who do you want? Gershwin, Hammerstein, Rodgers and Hart? And he says, I want Sammy Kahn. And they said, well, we don't mind hiring him. Who is he? And then there was a big fight going on. They didn't know who Sammy Kahn was or Julie Stein. And they said, we want to go with somebody more established. And Sinatra had a big fight with the studio. So then later on, it got to such a point that somebody came to Sammy Kahn and said, Sammy, you got to have Frank back down on this because he's going to lose the picture. So Sammy Kahn went to Frank Sinatra and said, you've done me proud, Frank. He said, yesterday nobody knew me. Today everybody hates me. He says, there'll be other projects we can work on in the future. Just back off for now. Let them have the songwriters they want. And then Sinatra said, if you aren't there Monday, I'm not there Monday. And so Sammy Kahn wrote the songs with Julie Stein and for that film. And then later on at Capitol, Sinatra had Sammy Kahn and Jimmy Van Heusen write many of his songs for him. Sinatra never was a songwriter. I think he contributed a lyric or two to some songs like I'm a Fool to Want You and Mr. Success and This Love of Mine are three that come to my mind off the top of my head. He didn't really compose the music. He might have added a couple of lyrics, and they gave him a writer's credit on it. But, he had his own songwriting team. Conor Van Heusen wrote all those great songs for him, like, All the Way and High Hopes and Come Fly With Me and The Tender Trap.
I love Come Fly With Me. I love Come Fly With Me. I always do. That pops in my head right away when I think of Frank Sinatra. I mean, many other songs, too. But so he really stood on his convictions. He really knew where he was headed, and he stuck with it. I mean, that's, to put up a fight like that, I think that's great. He knew. He knew who could make it work and what he wanted.
He was very loyal to his friends, and he knew certain ideas about what he wanted, he wouldn't back down on it, and he always wanted to sing good quality material, and that's what he did for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I don't want to make it sound negative at all, because it's not negative. It shows what you just said, his loyalty. I read a story once about I don't know how much is valid or not, because I don't know Frank Sinatra like you know Frank, as far as details. Yeah. But I read a story once that he was very close with Sammy Davis Jr. And he was really upset because in the White House, I think he wasn't, the Kennedys wouldn't allow him to bring Sammy Davis Jr. There was something going on there. I don't know if you're familiar with it, Nancy was very upset about that. Back to one of the dinners or one of the functions, I'm not sure.
Well, what that was in 1960.
Oh, my gosh,
Sinatra.
Okay, yeah. That's great.
Sinatra, he was upset because during 1960, he he campaigned very hard to get Kennedy elected president. So he did a lot of fundraisers for Kennedy, and he would get his Hollywood friends to, you know, go on these concerts with him. So he had people like Sammy Davis and Dean Martin and guys like that to perform at these fundraisers and raise money for Kennedy. And after all that hard work, and if you may recall, Kennedy narrowly defeated Nixon that year. It was one of the closest presidential elections in our history. So Kennedy made the White House. So then at the inaugural gala, when Sinatra, they, you know, Kennedy showed his appreciation to Sinatra and said, and asked him to be in charge of putting together the inaugural gala for his inauguration, the night before the inauguration. So Sinatra was honored and threw his whole support into putting all these, I think he got all of Hollywood to appear in that gala, which is tremendous. Wow. It was all recorded, by the way, and I played the whole performance from that show in the past. But yeah, at the time, Sammy Davis, well, even though he worked hard for Kennedy, back in that era, he was about to marry My Brit, who was a white woman, and because of that, the Kennedys didn't want Sammy to appear in the inaugural gala after all the hard work he'd done for them, and Sinatra was angry about that. But that's kind of the story behind that. Those were the times when mixed marriage wasn't considered wasn't accepted like it is today. So it was a different era.
That's a shame. It's that he was really upset with what I'd read before. I didn't know all the details, and that shows he's really an amazing person, and that's I'm glad we've come a long way from that,
Sure.
Wow. So
can
you believe we've got only about 15 minutes left? At how fast time's flown. I can't.
Well, I know.
It's just so exciting, huh?
Well, yeah, I can't believe I've been talking for about 45 minutes. I hope what I'm saying is interesting to you.
Wonder. I mean, it's just like we're talking, and you know everything. It's just amazing. I love it. You've been really 17 years on the radio every week doing the Frank Sinatra's history, songs, life. What a commendable.
It's like I say, it's a labor of love in doing the show. And, you know, when I originally conceived it in my mind how I wanted to do the show, I thought, I'd like to get the whole story behind, the man and behind the songs and all that. And, Natalie, anybody who's a disc jockey, anybody can play a song on an album, right? Anybody can do that. It takes no particular skill to do that, but I wanted to not just play the music. I wanted to dig behind the music and tell how it was created, So I was fortunate to interview a lot of Sinatra songwriters and musicians and arrangers. And I try to tell the story, like, for example, before we come to an album like, Watertown, which Sinatra recorded in 1969, I wanted to tell the story about how that album was created. So I was able to talk to Bob Gaudio and Jake Holmes, who wrote the songs, and ask them how they came up with that. And then I talked to the arranger, and they told me all these great stories. And you gather all this material from all these interviews, and then you put them together in a story to tell how the album came about and how it was created. And I have, Jake Holmes on there talking about how he wrote the songs and what he was thinking about when he wrote the songs, and just telling the whole story, right? So, but we try to give a behind-the-scenes story, and that goes throughout in the entire career of Sinatra, where, you're not just hearing the music, but how was this song written? How did they get the song to Sinatra? I'll tell you a funny story. I was talking to Lou Spence, who wrote the Sinatra song Nice and Easy, which was a big hit for Sinatra in 1960. And Lou told me that when he wrote the song, he took it to Las Vegas and he auditioned it for Sinatra on the piano. He said Sinatra listened to it. And after Lou Spence got through playing it, so Sinatra picked the music up off the music stand and dropped it down on the ground. So, okay, what else have you got? You know, so So you know, he didn't like it. So afterwards, one of Sinatra's guys said, "Look, Lou," he says, "don't worry about that." He says, "I'll get him to record it." I forget who it was he was talking to, but what happened was that every morning, Lou Spence would be at Sinatra's house. Sinatra slept till late in the day, so Lou Spence would be over at his house on the piano. So every morning when Sinatra got up, Lou would be in there playing on the piano in Sinatra's home, and he'd be playing nice and easy. And this went on for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks. And then finally one morning, Sinatra comes down and says, "You know, what's that song you keep playing every morning when I wake up?" And he said, and I think one of Sinatra's guys said, "Well, you know, Frank, that's the next song you're going to do on the recording date next week." And Frank said, "Well, you know, it's funny, you know, I don't think I have an arrangement for that. You better call Nelson and have him write the arrangement for it. And, you know, get a key for me." And then he recorded it, and of course it became a smash hit, the title of the album, Nice and Easy, and it was a big seller. So, see, these are the type of stories that I try to put on the air about how a song was created. And it's kind of fascinating when you hear these, how these songs were able to be, I guess you could say, sold to Sinatra and get them working. Have you got time for a funny Billy May story?
Yes, absolutely. I love it.
Billy May, you were talking about the album Come Fly With Me, and what is this one of your favorite songs? Well, Billy May was a tremendous arranger, and he did a lot of albums for Sinatra. And in the 1957, they were going to record Come Fly With Me. So, but the thing about Billy May, as great as he was always a procrastinator. So one time I was talking to Frank Flynn, who played vibraphone, and he told me this amazing story. That one afternoon, Frank Flynn told me that he and Billy May were doing the Stan Freberg radio show in Los Angeles, and it was, I think, 4 in the afternoon or something, and they did the live radio show, and then when they got done with it, they're standing out on the street corner talking to each other, and then Billy all of a sudden says to Frank, "Oh," he says, "I got to go. I got to write 3 arrangements for Frank for the recording session tonight." And this is like 4 o'clock. And this is like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And the recording session is at 8 o'clock.
Oh, no.
And Billy May's got to write 3 arrangements for the whole orchestra.
He's so brilliant. He's so genius and brilliant. He can do it with his eyes closed, huh?
I know, and it's unbelievable that he could write 3 arrangements for a full orchestra within 4 hours, right?
Amazing.
And Natalie? Huh?
Oh, go ahead.
And what do you think one of the songs was that you wrote the arrangement for? Come Fly With Me.
Because you said, "I've got..." Oh, my gosh. That fast.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's amazing. And when you listen to that arrangement, it's brilliant because it opens up violins playing what sounds like the sound of an airplane taxiing down the runway, right, and then soaring off into the air with these wonderful sweeping strings, and it's absolutely brilliant. And when I think to myself that Billy May wrote that along with 2 other arrangements in 4 hours, I'm just in awe of that these guys Sinatra worked with. I mean, and again,
I'm
these are the type
too.
Of
wow.
stories. Yeah, see, these are the type of stories we like to let people know about who may not know these things. And it adds so much more to the show when you can have stories like that. Mm-hmm.
Oh, to Frank Sinatra, to you, to the people that you said he worked with, and just amazing to that talent, you know, the talent that's so natural, and it just amazes me.
Yeah, well.
Nowadays people post on their YouTube or they make their own CDs, or there's just so much, it's so much easier. I don't know, it just seems easier for people to get things out there, right, to get discovered, to get known, or to at least put their work out there.
Yeah, it's a different era nowadays, certainly a different era where, with YouTube and the digital revolution, you don't really need, I guess you don't need a recording contract today. You can just make your own stuff because you've got, people can do digital home studios now, so they can sit down and do their own music. So it's certainly a different era than what it was like, 50, 100 years ago. Well, actually, even probably 30 years ago.
Wow. It's just, I mean, we've got about 8 minutes left because I'm not rushing anything. I just kind of, I'm in awe. I mean, and you just know story after story after story. I'm going to listen to your show because this is just, it's really interesting. It's just, so he died at 82 years old, I guess.
Yeah, he was 82 years old, and he died on May 14th, 1998, and he passed away then, and he left a great legacy of stuff behind, tremendous recordings and fantastic television specials that have been released on DVD and countless performances, and they just released one here in November that had never been heard and never been officially released before. His January 28th, 1966 concert with Count Basie at the Sands Hotel, a complete show, and it's just, it's very, very good sound quality, and the Sinatra sounds great. And these are the things that you can hear on my radio show this week, and also on Sunday.
I love it.
Yeah, on the Sunday show, obviously I couldn't play everything in 3 hours on Saturday, but we're going to have an hour show on Sunday from 5 to 6 Hawaii time where we'll be playing more of those great radio tracks from the 1940s, which I'm sure everybody will enjoy.
Oh, I would love to hear you write. I would love to talk to you another hour now. I mean, I'm just really, I'm excited. It's like it whet my appetite. Like, oh, my gosh, I want to hear more. I want to hear more of the stories because it's just, it's wonderful. It's like, it's, we didn't even get into the fact that, we didn't even get into the Rat Pack or the movies, the fact that he actually was in the movies. And I, from what I understand, he actually won a supporting actor Oscar from Here to Eternity. I had read that. Did other movies and amazing, just
His first film that he did on his own was in 1943. He did a film called Higher and Higher, which was kind of a lightweight musical. And then he later on did Anchors Away with Gene Kelly, which is his first big one. And and then later on he had dramatic roles like From Here to Eternity, where he won the Best Supporting Actor Oscar in 1954, which kind of started his career comeback. His career had been in a slump from the late 40s to early 50s, and that really started him on the way back again. Yeah, so he was a tremendously talented man. He could do acting. And of course, singing, and I don't think there's ever been anybody like him in the history of show business. He's amazing.
I want to get. Can you come back and talk about him more too? Because I want to hear more. Well, I'm going to listen to your show too, but I'm just saying it looks like he received a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award. Wow.
Yeah, yeah, and on the occasion of his 40th anniversary in show business on December 12, 1979, he won this Grammy Award, recognizing his great outstanding standards of recording artistry over the past 40 years. So, yeah, that was one of the many things he won. He won other Grammy Awards for his album Come Dance With Me and September of My Years and Strangers in the Night won a Grammy, and I can't remember them all right now, but, yeah, he won the many Grammy Awards for his artistry too.
He's such a timeless class. He just amazing. It's like there's, he just goes on and on. I love it.
We talked for about an hour. I could probably talk another hour more or whatever, but it's something I have a lot of passion for, and it's fun to be able to, I've been blessed to have a venue like Hawaii Public Radio to share these Sinatra performances with the people, and It's wonderful to be able to do that, and I'm very appreciative.
And you've given back. You just, it's amazing how much you done with it too. 17 years. I'm going to start listening too when I can, because and anybody that hears this now and then can hear in the future. We have a lot of people that download the show, and they're in a lot of different areas. So that's how. So can actually though at any time get Hawaii Public Radio, but you can go to the website, right? HawaiiPublicRadio.org. And then, Guy, you're on HPR, HPR2 channel, right? And so it's streamed live.
It's streamed live. So just go to HawaiiPublicRadio.org, and then once you get to that page in the upper right-hand corner, there's a logo that says Listen Live, and then you can, they have HPR logo there and HPR2. Click on HPR2, and that'll take you to the audio stream. And you can hear what's going out on
I love it. Can people listen to the older recordings, too?
Well, those aren't archived at the moment. We hope to have that available at some point, but right now we don't have any archives for people to pick on, to choose, but hopefully we'll have that going at some point.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Wow, I'd love to have you back again, too, for another hour. I want to ask you to sing Happy Birthday to Frank Sinatra. I won't put you on the spot, though, so you don't have to, but wouldn't that be... He's just...
Oh, yes. Well, actually, it's funny you mention that, because if you listen to my radio show at 3 o'clock on the opening hour, you're going to hear Frank Sinatra singing Happy Birthday to himself.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and I thought that would be a great way to open the show on his 100th birthday, is to have him singing Happy Birthday to himself. I won't try to do that right now, but
you have
a great
voice.
As good as Frank.
You have a great voice, but that's a wonderful way to open it. I am definitely going to make sure, because I'll be flying back. I'll be arriving early in the morning Saturday on the mainland, because I'm in LA right now, and I'm gonna definitely try to hear that, because this is just so exciting.
I'm very pleased to be on your show today, Natalie, and the fact you asked me be on to honor Mr. Sinatra, and thank you for that. I can't remember having so much fun talking about Frank Sinatra with you, and hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Absolutely. We want to do it. Want to do it soon. We've got about 2 minutes left. So I just want to, I don't want to rush this off, but I want you to be able to go in and, so he's, has what, two daughters, is it two daughters? No. Son and two daughters.
He's got Nancy and Tina and Frank Jr. Lily and I went to Dodger Stadium on September 18th when they had Frank Sinatra night at Dodger Stadium, and Frank Jr. was out there singing the national anthem, and it was fun. And then after the show, they had a fireworks display to Sinatra's music. That was quite a thrill. A lot of stuff going on this year, not only at Dodger Stadium, but around the country, honoring Sinatra on his 100th birthday.
Oh, my gosh. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. And you're just amazing. I don't know of anybody that knows it like you do. I mean, the way the story is one after, it's just amazing. And
I hope it's been entertaining I hope you found what I've said interesting. And, I appreciate the chance to talk with you, and hopefully you enjoy the show this weekend.
I love it, and we'll have you back soon, and you have a wonderful one. This has just been great, and thank you so much. And I want to say happy birthday, Mr. Frank Sinatra, right? And it's amazing how fast 100 years. It's amazing how fast 100 years goes by, and the way his life lives on. And thank you, Guy, for everything, and I honor you for 17 years of doing this week in and week out, and all the work that you put into it, just from as a labor of love. It's so wonderful. So we're going to sign off, and to everybody out there, I wish you peace, and thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized
Thank
to be
so
an
much.
Agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.